In Puerto Rico, they call themselves Boricua. But Boricua is more than a name for a person from Puerto Rico. It's a way of life that means embracing the beauty that surrounds you, seeking adventure no matter where it may lead, and sharing that vibrant spirit with everyone you meet. And you can experience all that warm, welcoming, passionate culture set in a tropical island paradise without the need for a passport for U.S. citizens or permanent residents. Learn more about how you can live Boricua at discoverpuertorico.com. In Puerto Rico, they call themselves Boricua. But Boricua is more than just a word to identify a person from Puerto Rico. It's a way of life that means embracing the beauty that surrounds you, seeking adventure, and sharing that vibrant spirit with everyone you meet. In Puerto Rico, you can experience a tropical paradise with world-class beaches. You can immerse yourself in the rich 500-year history of Old San Juan, where there are stunning forts, classic town plazas, and iconic monuments. You can indulge in a foodie paradise with renowned restaurants, seaside kiosks, and an innovative cocktail scene. And you can take in an abundance of natural wonders like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. National Forest System, all without the need for a passport for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more about the warm culture of Puerto Rico and how you can live Boricua at discoverpuertorico.com. I heard a little bit of the static, but
let me move my phone a little further away.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay, yeah.
That it represents that we're actually all over the world. And like, yeah. Zari is calling in from Aruba where there's no power. This is a travel magazine, people.
This is. We walk the walk. I'm Aislinn Green, and this is Unpacked, the podcast that unpacks one tricky topic in travel every week. Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome back. I know that we are a few weeks into the new year, and I hope it's been treating you well. We have a whole new season for you, full of tips and tricks to make your travel life the very best it can be. And this season, we are debuting a new series called Unpacking that explores places around the world to help you understand them better and to experience them more fully. You can get hints about where we're traveling this season by following me on social media. I'll link to my handles in the show notes. And this season, we are also debuting video podcasts. So if you want to see my currently terrible background, follow Afar Media on YouTube. We will also link to that in our show notes. And I do promise that my background will improve as the year goes on and the construction that we are undergoing finally wraps up. Okay, so now we have all the admin out of the way because we're really here to talk about a fresh year in travel. It's a clean slate. We're all itching to fill our calendars and book our trips, or at least I am. And I imagine maybe you are as well, or just looking for a little bit of inspiration. And I may be biased, but we do have some really fantastic suggestions for you. Our Where to Go in 2024 list has 25 destinations, and that list is part of our annual Where to Go issue, which we just released on newsstands. So if you are a magazine person like myself, be sure to pick that up because we have these phenomenal photographs that accompany the list. We will also link to the digital version of that list, which is fantastic, but there is something that I find very satisfying about sitting down with the magazine, putting your phone aside, reading the stories, and just dreaming a little. And today, we are going to unpack that list with three of the Afar editors who made it happen. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Unpacked. Welcome back to Unpacked.
Thanks so much for having us. We're so excited to be here to talk about Where to Go.
Yeah, I know. And you are fresh off making this list happen.
It's burned into our brains. We're all very excited for 2024 to happen so we can start taking these trips we've been writing and editing about for months.
Before we start talking about the list, I'd love to just start with having everyone introduce themselves and say where they are in the world. Sarika, do you want to start?
Hi, I'm Sarika Bunsell. I am the editorial director. I'm based in Nairobi, Kenya.
There has been a countrywide power outage for the last 24 plus hours now. So I have a bit of a cobbled setup right now. luckily, we do have like a good solar power backup and everything. But I feel very like I'm glad I'm here by the string of my teeth.
It is very impressive that you're here, given all of that. Thank you. And Billy, how about you?
Hi, I'm Billy Cohen, executive editor, and I'm based in New York.
And you have power.
And we have power. Yeah.
It's not 2003.
Yeah. If it's not summer, right, where everything, there are a ton of brownouts in the city. But yeah, seems to be doing okay. We have construction, though. So if you hear any of that out my back window, that's what that will be.
And Tim, that leaves you.
Hi, I'm Tim Chester. I'm deputy editor. I'm in a very sunny, power-filled Southern California, Thousand Oaks near LA, where I always am when we do these. I thought I was a traveler, but I always seem to be at home when it's podcast time. So, yeah, California.
We need to plan the next recording for when you're somewhere really fascinating.
Exotic. Yeah.
Maybe exactly. Someplace on the list. Yeah. All right. Well, let's dig into this wonderful list that you've put together. I mean, it's a big one. How did you approach this year? What was your mindset going into it?
I think a couple of things that we tend to look for when we start getting pitches in are, of course, there's just no shortage of great places to go ever. And I know that these lists can sometimes feel a little bit random. One of the things that we really try to filter for is like what's new in a place or what places are really having a moment. And that can be, you know, one of many things. If there's a cultural opening or if there's something exciting happening regarding conservation, or if there's just some big event happening that is a reason to go specifically next year, that's one thing that we really typically try to look for. And then we also really, you know, are looking to get a good geographical mix. So, you know, we don't want to just focus a bunch of places in Europe, but really want to try to get around the globe and give people reasons to go maybe back to places that they've already been and also consider some places in the world that they may not have ever heard of. And I think our list has a nice mix of both of those.
100%. My favorite part of making the list and working on this, apart from when the issues just left the building, is right at the beginning when we solicit pitches. And we have writers and contributors all around the world in all sorts of places. And getting back in touch with them, finding out where they are, where they're recommending, what they're excited about. We kind of get all these ideas in, like, well over a couple of hundred ideas, and divide them up by continent and then have a look at them together. And it's just really interesting to sort of take the pulse, the travel writer community, and see what's exciting everyone. And then the hard work of kind of narrowing it down, you know, all a list comes in.
Yeah. And I love that we're working with writers and our staff who've actually been in these places with their feet on the ground. Some of them live in these places. So we get all these pitches and we get all these ideas, and sometimes they're locations that surprise us because maybe we wouldn't have thought of that, but because that person is very familiar with that location, they're able to give a new spin on it that we think is really interesting and will be really interesting to travelers as well.
I love that. I love that there's so much knowledge and kind of intimate experience with these places going into the list. Tim, you mentioned it started as a pretty big list, and this year we have 25 destinations on the list, which still feels like sometimes more. How did you wind up with 25?
Well, it couldn't be 24 for 24. That's too neat.
No?
Too cheesy.
Yeah. We don't go in for that kind of numerical punnery. Yeah.
Don't other puns are fine, but not
right. Totally. Wait till we start talking about Bruno.
Yeah. Oh, oh boy. I was wondering who would be first.
So obviously going to be me.
Obviously, it's Bill.
I had it down as my answer for the second question. You beat me to it. No one's going to know what we're talking about. Should we just talk about that joke now? There's one of the places is Brno in Czechia.
Yeah, go for it.
And it's spelled Brno, which is obviously Bruno without the U. And Billy, do you want to explain why that?
Because of Encanto? And yeah. So the minute it got pitched, I just started making that terrible pun. Every time it came up, I was like, let's talk about Bruno. Let's talk about Bruno. And then I enlisted Tim to ask him to repeat the joke every time he was talking about it too. And he very gamely agreed. So here we are. And here all the listeners get to know the hijinks behind the scenes and my love of puns.
I think with the list, we did get it down to sort of a dozen, and then we kept having places that we really wanted to have in, and so it went up.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of doubled in size, didn't it? And obviously some of them are rounded up in thematic pieces.
Yeah. Yeah, we started seeing some places, like, for example, Paris has the Summer Olympics going on, so it felt like an obvious inclusion, but we also didn't want to give it so much space in the magazine because the Summer Olympics could be, for a lot of people, a reason not to go to Paris next year. But we didn't want to not mention it. So it became like we had a few places, like
Bruno Cecchia and a bunch of others that we were really excited to feature. But then there were some others that also just felt like there were important enough things happening there, or they were capitals mm-hmm. of something like the European capital of culture and whatnot, that felt, you know, really interesting and important to mention. But then we didn't want to give it as much space in the print magazine.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, you mentioned events, and that does seem to be a bit of a theme throughout the list. We'll talk about some in particular a little later on, but why was that a focus, and what are you most excited about?
I'll jump in. One of the big events for 2024 is the solar eclipse that's happening on April 8th. Across the staff at AFAR, we're all seem to be obsessed with these eclipses. So that was in Texas. So the idea was raised by one of our colleagues, May Hamilton, that Texas and the Hill Country in Texas would be an ideal place to experience the eclipse coming April 8th. So we knew we wanted to do something on that. And then using that as an opportunity to talk about that area of the country where there's also a lot going on. There's a lot in the wine scene. There's a lot of small towns with a lot of culture to visit. It seemed like a great way to talk about an event, but also make it more about a place that people could experience beyond that one day. Another way that we were thinking about events, not just go and have the event and experience the event, but what can we share with people about the location that that event is taking place in?
I think that really comes out nicely in Texas on the choice of photography. When I thought of that piece, I imagined just big, wide open Texan plain at night with some stars or something obvious about the eclipse. But actually what we've got is this lovely shot of two girls swimming underwater at one of the swimming holes there and a truck driving through the kind of wildflower meadows. And that's one of my favorite things about writing for a magazine, especially, is when the art team bring it to life, and it's just amazing. I love it.
Yeah, an unexpected look at the place. Why do you think so many people are drawn to traveling for solar eclipses?
It feels like a nerdy phenomenon that's still cool, and everyone can still appreciate the enormous power of it. I think it's also a moment to just feel connected with this much broader galaxy that we live in. And to just realize that we are quite small. I felt that for sure. I got to see some really faraway galaxies in a telescope, you know, very powerful telescope. And just that feeling of being really small and reminded of, you know, that we are just little dots. It's kind of an amazing feeling. I think it just brings people together.
Yeah. And the fact that we all get to witness it together, I think there's something really special about that.
Astrotourism seems to be a big thing at hotels everywhere nowadays. I mean, a number of places, someone at a hotel, someone's rolled out a telescope and has been an impromptu stargazing type experience. I think people are just traveling for that all the time. So obviously the eclipse is like the big festival, you know, dramatic version of that.
Absolutely. Well, what else surprised you on this year's list?
I don't want to give Brno too much of the limelight, but obviously Prague is the more well-known city. And great story from Emma John about just the arts and culture and the vibe of that city and some of the really interesting things going on there, like Cabinet Moots, this vegan cafe by day and band venue at night, Museum of Fine Arts with floating chairs and as part of the exhibits, cocktail bar where you take part in the story, and a hotel that's only 26 feet wide. I think she, in that piece, she really brought out all the sort of interesting curiosities of that place and definitely made me want to visit, which is obviously the point of these pieces.
I'll say two things generally that surprised me about the list. One is a lot of places that we chose are places that you had, I mean, of course, we do have the Brno's and a few others that I think will be quite new for a lot of readers. But we do have quite a few places that I think people have heard of and may have traveled to before, but we have sort of fresh reasons to visit. Two examples that come to mind there are Rome, Italy, and Los Angeles, California. And both of them are pretty well-known destinations. In the case of Rome, there are a lot of new, beautiful looking hotels that I think will be a draw for people to come and not just come in and try to see the Colosseum and try to do all of the bucket list type of things that Rome is famous for, but also just try to stay and enjoy the city and experience a lot of the other pieces of the city that may be overlooked. There are also a lot of archaeological sites that are being breathed new life into. And I think that just gives a lot of people who maybe have been to Rome once before on a Europe trip at some point, a reason to go back and really try to explore the city afresh. in Los Angeles, there's a really large Black art movement that's going on there, a really large space that's opening up, and also a ton of new restaurants that I think a lot of our readers would be excited to check out. And the second thing that surprised me about our list is that a lot of destinations we chose because of their sustainability and conservation commitment. This is true for places like Fiji, where a lot of hotels have strong commitments to help preserve ocean life. Places like Norway, where there's just so much green transport and ways to get around the country, and many others too that I think that really have done quite a lot on the environment, which was one of our factors in choosing it.
Yeah, some of the places that we chose had cultural sustainability and a cultural aspect that was coming up, obviously events and festivals, but one of the places that surprised me or that I learned something about was St. Kitts. The pitch came in from a writer we've worked with, Rosalind Cummings Yeats, and she had been there and met two people who were sort of bringing back the legacy of rum in St. Kitts. Now, it's in the Caribbean, and I think people sort of widely know that there were sugar plantations there during the various colonial eras of those islands, and St. Kitts had been a British colony for a very long time, where there were a lot of plantations that were farmed by enslaved African peoples. And recently, there's this movement to reclaim that really painful and complicated past, but through local residents, local Kittitians, they call themselves. So there's two companies that are doing that to sort of bring back that history and talk about it in a new light, really reevaluating that history and sharing what it meant to the local people who were living there and their descendants now. And I think especially in the Caribbean, where maybe people are just thinking about it as a sun and beach destination, to learn that there are points of cultural connection that are available. That was surprising and exciting to me.
That's so cool. And you can taste the rum?
Yes. So you can go yeah. Mm-hmm, you can go to these places. The two companies, one is run by this guy, Jack Woodison. It's called Old Road Rum Company. And he grew up on an estate that was a sugar plantation. Mm-hmm. And when he was like a teenager, there are archaeologists who found the ruins of an old distillery on it. They dated it back to the 1600s, and they think it's the oldest rum distillery in the Caribbean. And he was like 14 when they found this. And so then he grows up and he's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start a rum company. He's trying to rebuild that distillery actually so that they can, for the first time in a long time, you know, make rum actually on the island. But in the meantime, he's blending rums from the region and inviting people to the property where he does tours and lets them taste and talks about this history. So yeah, you can go. And there's a tour you can take called the St. Kitts Rum Masters Tour. So you can go and visit the Old Road Rum and another company called Hibiscus Spirits and taste and learn how to make St. Kitts Kittitian cocktails and Caribbean influence cocktails and really hear the story and learn about the history in a new perspective.
Well, one of the other things that I'm hearing you say, I think all three of you, is that you learn so much through making this list. Is there anything in kind of a broader sense that you feel like you learned kind of putting this list together?
How many places there are in the world that I cannot wait to visit, you know? It's never ending, which, I mean, thank goodness.
I think also we have a lot of focus on arts and culture this year. And a lot of our stories, like Los Angeles that I had mentioned before, St. Kitts, there's many others too, Manchester, England, which Billy wrote. And they all seem so specific, their art scenes. You can get to some things that feel like, you know, you could be anywhere. But all of the ones that we highlight, I feel like they seem very specific to the place, which I love that.
Some of that really seems to come because many of the writers who wrote pieces this year actually live in these places or know them really well. You mentioned Rome earlier, Sarika, and that was written by someone who lives there and has that kind of insider knowledge, right?
Yeah, Laura Itzkowitz, she first moved to Rome for a couple of years in 2009, and now she's lived there permanently since 2019 or so. It was so clear working with her just how knowledgeable she was. One thing I really enjoyed while working on that story in particular was she talks about some of the archaeological digs and these different sites that were uncovered first by Mussolini and then fell a little bit more into disrepair and then are now being brought back. And I almost felt like as I was reading the story, I was getting the type of tour that she was talking about in Rome that so many tourists don't do because they're just focused on hitting up the Colosseum, going to the Forum, then, you know, booking it to the Amalfi Coast so they can take all their Instagram photos. And
this was just such a, just even the process of reading the story, I felt like, oh, I get what she's talking about. And every question that I had for her, she would just write these long paragraphs and then say, well, if this doesn't work, then we can try this site. And she would just tell me all about the history of that site, going back to like Julius Caesar. And it was a little bit of a European history primer that I was getting.
You need to put that out there somewhere for listeners to read. I also wanted to talk about sustainability. You mentioned it earlier. Is there anything else that you want to add about how this list was framed for a climate conscious traveler?
Yeah. So a couple of things that come to mind for me, and Billy and Tim, please add. One is that we do have a decent number of domestic destinations in the list as well. So people don't have to travel halfway around the world in order to get to experience something magical. Like, we do highlight a few great American cities, including places like Philadelphia and Seattle and Charleston, that are having moments right now, and other North American cities too, like Toronto and Los Angeles. So all of these places, I think, are much closer for a lot of our readers to actually get to. So that's something that, of course, like, you know, the actual act of traveling somewhere uses a lot of the carbon. And then a lot of the hotels that we mention throughout the piece, they also have really strong climate initiatives. For example, for getting back to Rome again, the Six Senses that we mention as one of the hotels there that's recently opened, they actually are on 100% green power. So, oh, you know, wow. Guests can feel a little bit better about staying at places that have such strong climate commitments. And so you can make your trip greener, both in how you get there, and then once you get there, where you stay, like all of these things sort of add up, and you can have a much lighter footprint than maybe a more traditional traveler would.
Yeah, I think you covered it. I mean, obviously, we're always trying to help people find lesser known, lesser touristed places, or if they're going somewhere like Rome, to stay longer. And I think there's plenty of ideas in the Rome piece for making a longer trip, supporting local businesses. I will say, you talk about what we learned making the list. I realized I need to see a lot more of LA, which is just down the road. Obviously, Destination Crenshaw, the Black Art Project, is finally opening next year. But there's loads of small businesses in that piece I could go and support and check out, and some great food options. It's also, just while we're on LA, the 100th anniversary of the Hollywood sign as well. So as well as everything new there, there's a lot of heritage, obviously, to enjoy. And I went for a walk up to the letters with the Hollywood Sign Trust chairman. It's very vertiginous, high. I'm not one for heights. He was giving me a long story of the history of the sign while I was kind of like holding on to the piece of wood that used to hold up the L for the land when it was Hollywood Land.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, some great history there. And you can walk all the way up behind it and see the sign and the city behind it. So sustainability wise, what did we miss?
Three locations in particular on the list that are notable for their sustainability efforts, and those were Fiji, which Tim wrote about and he can talk about, Norway, and Bhutan. Norway, it's almost, I won't say behind the scenes, but there's a sort of a countrywide effort to honor the beautiful nature that's there, right? Obviously, they have fjords and beautiful water and mountains, and they know it, right? But they also know, hey, we have to protect this. So the public transportation options, they're working on hybrid electric trains and fully electric trains. The country is phasing out internal combustion cars. So like, I think one in every five cars is an electric vehicle. Very easy to rent that. So the sort of day-to-day of your trip, if you were traveling there, could be respectful of the nature that you're seeing. And we wanted to recognize that. Tim, you want to talk about Fiji? There's a similar kind of thing going on there.
Yeah. What struck me about Fiji is there's obviously lots of high-end resorts there, but a lot of them are taking ocean conservation really seriously and letting guests help with that. So you can help plant coral, you can plant mangrove saplings. So mangroves are obviously the kind of plant superheroes when it comes to carbon sequestration. What is the word there? drawing down carbon and also acting as flood barriers and habitat. So yeah, I went there a year ago to stay at Nanuku Resort on the south coast of the main island, Viti Levu. Yeah, I just met some really passionate people there who were just doing lots of great things in the ocean and on the land.
I thought that was so cool that their resorts have marine biologists on staff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's amazing.
For Right? Not just for sustainability, but for nerdiness. Like, now I want to go to Fiji and just hang out with a marine biologist.
Yeah, and they're doing great work with local communities as well, helping them come and see the project, get involved, and they're planting these mangroves near the villages to help sort of add flood protection there rather than, you know, building big concrete walls and putting bricks down. The other thing that struck me about Fiji is very few people go there from the States. When I went from LA, it's a direct flight. You have to take an overnight flight both ways, which is the downside. But the plus side is in 2022, 70,000 people went from the US and 7.7 million went to Hawaii. So if you're looking for somewhere with a lot less tourists and a lot more space to enjoy all this natural beauty, then I recommend it. I loved it.
If you enjoyed our recent episode on Native tourism, then you should check out Toasted Sister, an award-winning show that documents the Native American food movement. Hosted by Andy Murphy, Toasted Sister talks with dozens of Native chefs, farmers, and individuals in the food industry who are working towards Indigenous food sovereignty. Each episode includes topics of sovereignty, racism, sexism, politics, and health, and a lot of personal stories about connecting with food, flavor, and culture. So go ahead, listen to Toasted Sister on your favorite podcast app. Well, we talked a little bit about events earlier, but one that really caught my eye was, I think the whimsy of it was the Kite Festival. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Chinese city that hosts it?
Yes, Waifang. I've never been there myself. I've only been to Beijing, but it's about halfway between Beijing and Shanghai, about 4 or 5 hours drive from each. And next year is the Culture City of East Asia. It's sort of one of the places that has a claim to being the birthplace of kites, but it's definitely known as a kite capital of the world. And they have this festival every April, International Kite Festival. It draws in tens of thousands of people, and as you can imagine, all the kind of colorful kites. And they have a World Kite Museum. I don't know, have you guys flown kites? For me, it's like half an hour of untangling and for 3 minutes of fun with the children. So I imagine it's amazing to see experts beautifully made, you know, handmade kites. The sky is full of them.
That sounds so cool.
Yeah, Waifang is also a UNESCO creative city of crafts and folk art. So it's not just kites. The visitors there can learn about clay modeling, paper cutting, woodblock printing. It just sounds like a very interesting creative city, and apparently has a great night food market scene as well.
Well, I think it kind of came up naturally earlier, but, you know, because Tim, you've been to Fiji, but have you been to any of these places recently? I mean, Billy, I know you were just in Estonia and loved it.
Yeah, I'm going to say I won't bore you all with it, but I will bore you all with it. I loved it.
Please do.
I loved it. Estonia, I didn't know much about it. I think most U.S. travelers' familiarity with it is Tallinn, the capital, which is a stop on Baltic cruises. So that's the port that people go to. And they don't really get out of that city. And that is just a missed opportunity. The country's small. It's phenomenal. It's gorgeous. You've got this beautiful UNESCO World Heritage old town in Tallinn, which is gorgeous. It's like 14th century castles and walls and things. And then you can go 2 hours outside and be in a couple of national parks. I went hiking in a bog, which was like walking on snowshoes. Imagine a carpet of peat moss, like a foot thick, and it just kind of sinks slightly, and you're on converted snowshoes, so you're sort of walking on water, and it's just gorgeous. So I got to do that and hike through a forest, and you can pick your own mushrooms because everything is like fresh and natural, and all of it, everything's like 2 hours apart, and it's super modernized. Like the roads and the highways, everybody speaks English. There's Wi-Fi everywhere. Like, the country is really committed to internet access and digital education and stuff, so it's very easy for travelers to experience. And then in Tartu, which is the second largest city, it's only about 100,000 people, so it's still pretty small. They are one of Europe's cultural capitals for 2024. So there, we talked about events, but all year long in 2024, there are going to be various things that people can go and experience and get to know that city, which is also surprised me, because you get to the main town square and it looks like something out of like Nice. Like, it looked like Southern Europe. It's like a cobblestone town square with a statue in the middle and these beautiful, colorful, stately buildings around and open air cafes everywhere and a river running through it. So it has this very European feel that my guess is people don't associate with that far north in Europe. And it was just cool. And so there's all this like very sort of classical Europe feeling stuff, but there's also leftover Soviet era relics. And that was really interesting to see. I had a blast. I met so many cool people and I can't recommend it enough. Go to Estonia.
Billy, what made you want to go there in the first place?
I had read an article in BBC Travel where a writer had interviewed this man who lives in the area where they do the bog hiking. And I think the writer hadn't even gone because it was during the pandemic. But you can cut all this out, Aislinn. But there is in this region of Estonia where it's all bogs, like it's all marshes and stuff. They have what they call a fifth season that happens in March when all the snow melt from the surrounding areas. There's no real mountains in Estonia, but there's a lot of rivers. So the snow melt from the surrounding areas floods these rivers. And every couple of years, like cars sink, you know, like the water raises really high and everybody has to get around on canoes. And I just thought that sounded so interesting, and it was such an interesting climate story. It was such an interesting cultural adaptation story, and I just thought it was fascinating. So I was like, well, I want to go there. And then the rest of the trip happened, and then I got to meet that man who does the canoeing in the bogs. He's the one who took me hiking. So you never know. People read our stories, and then years later, exactly, they go to these places. Yeah. And then it turned out because Tartu was going to be one of the 2024 European Capitals of Culture. It was like, okay, well, now there's a moment happening. And how is this country going to embrace that and show off, you know, their arts and culture scenes for the rest of the world? That drew me in.
That is one thing I just love about our list in general, is just hopefully, even if people aren't able to go this year, it just plants a seed somewhere that, hey, this is a place that I never really thought of before. And hopefully one day when I'm able to go somewhere, that this may be somewhere on my list.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that you kind of save, right? Yeah. Like you save this version of the magazine or bookmark the article online and hopefully use it as inspiration for years to come.
I was just thinking the destination that I wrote about, which is Lamu, Kenya, I think is hopefully going to be that for a lot of people, because I think many people who come to Africa for the first time, the continent of Africa, which contains 54 countries, that they do typically go on safari to experience Africa's wild places, which are incredible. And I totally understand that. At the same time, there is so much more to the continent than animals and wild places. There's also just incredible cities. And in this case, the one that I wrote about, this island with a really very unique and well-preserved Swahili culture, which is this blend of Bantu, like East African culture, combined with Arabic and Persian and some European and Indian and Chinese cultures that have sort of made this melting pot. And it's very, you know, you wouldn't be able to find this architecture in many other places or a lot of other cultural facets that are very well preserved. Again, Lamu Town, which is the main town on the island, is also a UNESCO World Heritage Site for that reason. And I think anyone who is planning a trip to the continent, I feel like it's also really worth going to places like this.
How far is it from you, where you live?
It's about an hour flight. Flying is the best way to get there. And that's from Nairobi. And there's direct flights. And there's gorgeous hotels and guest houses to stay at. Like, truly, you just feel like you're in a photo shoot all day. Then the really unique thing about the island is that there's no cars. So, and there's not really, like, any, like, street signs or anything. So you just kind of walk around and they're like, meandering alleys. And you kind of find your way, you know. That's the thing. Like, you will get lost at some point, but then you'll be like, oh, yeah, I recognize that tree, or I recognize that donkey. There's a lot of donkeys there. And you sort of just like find your way again.
I mean, there's so few opportunities to get lost anymore. I love that.
But still feel safe. You know, it's like you feel like you're still contained in this small place. Like you really can't go very far.
The donkey will take you back.
The donkey will fill you.
A distinctive donkey.
Yeah. There actually is a donkey rehabilitation site on the island as well. You can go and visit and see just, you know, three-legged donkeys that are being rehabilitated and all sorts of other things. It's pretty cool. So another African destination that we've mentioned in our list is another city on the other side of Africa, Tangier, Morocco, which is in the very, very far north of Morocco. I ended up learning a lot about the colonial history of the city, and it used to be considered part of an international zone, and it was managed by a consortium of other countries, including like Italy and Spain. So it wasn't really considered part of Morocco for a long time, and it has a bit of an international edge to it. Now the city is becoming a lot more connected to its Moroccan identity. There's a lot of really creative Moroccans who are doing amazing things, like they're, you know, running restaurants and cultural programs and shops that are selling different types of home goods and beauty products that are all Moroccan-led companies. And a lot of them are also run by young women. So I think it's a really cool way to experience a city that has historically had this international, very artsy edge to it, but now that artsiness is being led by a lot of creative young Moroccans. So it seems like a place that I would be really excited to go and kind of see both old Tangier and the new Tangier combined.
Yeah, there are so many great cities on this list this year. Are there any that you feel like we didn't talk about that we should?
Yeah, I'll give a pitch for San Diego. Hmm. It's in our list along with Tijuana. The two cities on both sides of the border are the World Design Capital 2024 cities. Lots of design-focused events and lots of great architecture to see there, which is, you know, people think of San Diego and just beaches and tacos. And obviously, it's a huge city and there's lots to see in that regard. And I was there, I think, earlier this year, driving an EV around for an EV road trip for digital article. And so it's very easy to fly in and rent an EV and not have to, you know, have a gas powered car. And some of the design things are happening up in La Jolla, which is this lovely neighborhood north of the city on the cliffs. You can go sea kayaking in the caves there. There's leopard sharks in the water and bright orange Garibaldi fish and snorkeling. And it's just beautiful, beautiful place. So I'd heartily recommend that.
I give a shout out to Philadelphia. We put that in. We're all pretty excited about Philadelphia this year. People know Philadelphia. Obviously, it's a place for American history. Constitution was written there. But the food scene is just on fire. It won more James Beard Awards in 2023 than any other city for the chefs and restaurants. And they're diverse and just so, so interesting and varied. And it's a great reason to rethink and revisit that city this year. Plus, the art scene has always been great. And there's amazing institutions of art like the Philadelphia Museum of Art and the Barnes Foundation. But also the gallery scene has long been thriving, and it still is. They still do a first Friday every month where the galleries stay open. That's actually expanded. It's near New York, so I've been there a lot. So I'm very excited.
You know, when you said it had more James Beard Award winners, I was reaching for the hand clapping emoji to pop up on the screen. I think I've spent too much time on Microsoft Teams.
I'll also give a shout to Toronto, which is, I did not know this, that it is by many measures the most diverse city in the world, even more so than New York City and London. There are upwards of 180 languages spoken there. And just this year, one of the reasons why became included on our list this year is because they elected their first mayor who's a woman of color, Olivia Chow, who has talked a lot about diversity. And the piece takes you through several of the neighborhoods where you can go to Little Tibet and have momos. You can go to Koreatown and go, you know, sing karaoke there. You can go to a neighborhood where there's a lot of Somali people. And there's also, similar to Philadelphia, there are also some more high-end gastronomical experiences to have. And also just a lot of cultural events happening throughout the year. The Caribbean Festival in August draws, I think, 1 million people. And then there's a contemporary arts night in October that's an all-night affair and just brings in Torontonians from all stripes.
Amazing. And we're going as a company in March. I'm so excited.
I know. I've actually you know, I feel like the entire essay for that is basically just like my to-do list of all the different restaurants and neighborhoods to check off.
It is. We have much more to eat than we have time for.
Yeah.
Unless we can extend or come early.
Yeah, no, just do all just our meetings at the restaurant.
Second lunch, second dinner.
Yeah.
We had a great run of digital stories on Toronto earlier this year as well. So if you
we'll link to
there,
those.
Look at the Toronto guide on the website. We do this thing called My Perfect Day, and it's a local runs us through how they'd spend their perfect day. And one by Tiffany Ram-Subic, who runs Ode, which is Toronto's only black-owned boutique hotel. We've got a lot to do. We're going to need some extra time because we don't want to just be in meetings.
No, the meeting should be in the restaurants, I concur. Well, we've talked a lot about these urban destinations, arts and culture. What about people who like to travel for nature or to be outside?
Billy had briefly mentioned Bhutan. I think that Bhutan is an amazing country. I have not been myself, but Kathleen Relihan, she went last year and was one of the first people to hike the newly restored Trans-Bhutan Trail that fell into disrepair in the 60s and just reopened last year. And now just this year, Bhutan has lowered, it's always had a tourist tax. So that covers, you know, various things like lodging and a guide and whatnot. It's recently lowered the tourist tax to now $100 a day in order to spur more tourism. So, and there's also a lot of new hotels that have opened, as well as the Trans-Bhutan Trail. So the Trans-Bhutan Trail goes through the Bhutanese countryside and you get to pass Buddhist stupas and temples and all types of small towns and villages that were previously pretty much off limits entirely to foreigners. So lots of really cool reasons to visit Bhutan. It's also hugely conservation minded. So 60% of the country must be under forest cover. And it's the first carbon negative country in the world. So that's another cool reason to visit. See how they did it.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
We were all reaching clapping for again. For the clapping hands emoji.
Thank you.
One of our roundups that we have in the book is classic spots that are potentially worth a revisit. One of them is Machu Picchu, which is Peru's most popular destination with good reason. I mean, Machu Picchu is a brilliant feat of Incan engineering. The Sacred Valley, though, more generally, is just, it's one of the prettiest places in the world, in my opinion. And Intrepid Tours has recently opened up a new hike that takes people to be able to see Machu Picchu, but also see lesser visited sides of the Sacred Valley. So it's called the Quarry Trail, and they're able to visit older Incan towns and also just see some waterfalls and some other sites that were previously a bit more off limits. So definitely, I love the idea of revisiting a classic destination, but with a bit of a twist on it.
I would say if you like your outdoors with a glass of wine, then head to Uruguay this year. We had a lovely piece from Julia Buckley who wrote about this region called Maldonado. It's a coastal region. I think it's the next one along from Montevideo and Canelones. But anyway, it's very much the up-and-coming wine region of the country. And there's a sommelier there who's worked on a Mapa del Vino, which is a map of all of the boutique vineyards in Uruguay. So you can follow that trail and it just looks beautiful, land of alfresco food tastings and great reds, red wines. And yeah, definitely added that to my list after working on that piece.
Well, I'd love to just pivot a little bit more broadly to kind of where we're traveling next year, how we're traveling. You know, 2023 was such a busy travel year. Do you have any predictions for 2024?
I think it's still going to be busy. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's not going away anytime soon. But don't let that stop you. Yeah. I think that's one of the messages of our list too. You know, look to places off the mainstream path. For example, you know, in Europe, Estonia and Brno, in Africa, Lamu and Tangier, and then also rethink places that may be familiar to you, like a Rome or Toronto. There's another layer that we're trying to bring to the surface. So maybe that will help people avoid the goat track of the main masses of tourism.
Yeah, the busy places are just going to get busier, and climate will obviously play a part, so be prepared for that in certain places. Try and go shoulder season where you can. You know, the pandemic was a big reminder that you never know what's around the corner, so travel where you can, make the most of it, and that kitchen extension or new car can wait and just get out there and see the world.
Book your travel insurance. We'll link to our episode about that. Well, I'd love to end this conversation with where you are planning to go this year, where you want to go. It could be places on the list. It could be other trips that you have planned. Where are you editors going?
In part inspired by not our list, but a feature story in our previous issue, our Epic Trips issue. Over the holidays, I'm going with my family to Oman, which I'm really excited about. I had known a bit about it, but didn't really know just how diverse it was in terms of the types of things that you can do there, from snorkeling or scuba diving to mountain climbing to visiting the desert to, of course, like spending time in cities and eating lots of delicious Middle Eastern food. So I'm really excited to be able to do all of that, and definitely was also additionally inspired by our feature story, which is absolutely gorgeous. The photographs as well are just breathtaking. Some of these wadis, which are these big gorges, very sand colored, and then they have bright turquoise blue water running through them. They just look like they're, I don't know, out of a movie set or something like that. They don't even look real.
We'll link to that story as well because it's such a good one.
It is one of my favorites.
I should say the writing is amazing and the photographs are just kind of add to it even more. So it's just like on both sides of it, you're just like, wow, this place is just otherworldly.
Gotta go. Billy, how about you? What's your list look like this year?
I'm heading to Kenya in February, so I'm going to visit Sarika and then see if I can also get to Lamu from our list. And I often will travel for music or one random event. So Brno's on my list. They have that free music festival in August. And
cool.
And Manchester has a bunch of stuff going on because they have also, we were talking about arts and culture, have opened several venues, including the UK's largest entertainment. Basically, a concert venue is purpose built for music. And so there's concerts there I want to see. And I've already got a couple on my list, including a citywide, what's it called? It's called City of Floating Sounds. And ooh, it's an interactive symphony project where there's going to be music throughout the city of Manchester, and then it'll guide you through it and then back to this new theater space called the Viva Studios at Factory International, which just opened this year. And it's one of the reasons that the city's on our list. And then it'll end up there. So that's in June, and I want to go back for that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that sounds... I want to go too. Yeah.
Come on. Second company meeting.
Yes. Oh my God. I wish.
I loved your Manchester piece, Billy. How obviously the city's so well known for its music scene, but there's so much more happening nowadays that people maybe not be aware of.
Yeah. And that was one of the reasons I went, because it had that music history, but I was just floored by how much more there is, including amazing libraries. But that's another episode.
Tim, where will you be podcasting from the next time?
I'll be back in my office at home. My travel calendar's looking quite light, considering I've been working on this feature. I'm going to Palm Springs in January, and we have the trip to Toronto. But other than that, I'm looking at a blank slate that's filling up with other things. So I need to get the travel slotted in. I'd love to go to Peru. I think there's a direct flight from LA. And the idea of doing a trail like the Quarry Trail really appeals. So we shall see.
Would you take your kids, do you think? No. Or are they still too young? No.
That was so fast.
That was easy. It was very quick.
No, not even a moment of thought.
We're not hiking on to Machu Picchu with 8-year-olds and 4-year-olds, no.
It doesn't sound fun to you?
We were going to all go back to England in the summer, but we just bounced it back to the next Christmas now. And then I'm not looking forward to the flight.
I look forward to seeing how your slate fills up. Well, thank you so much. I mean, the list is phenomenal. The work that you did is really incredible. So thank you. And thanks. I feel very inspired to go to all 25 in 24. I think that's doable, right?
Where do you want to go, Aislinn?
I know.
What's on your list?
Well, all of them. I mean, Manchester, the music aspect sounds wonderful. Toronto is obvious. We're going to do that as a company. And then, I don't know. I feel like Kenya would probably be the first one that I would pick if I were just going to go anywhere tomorrow.
Karibu, so. Kenya. That means welcome to Kenya. Yeah. Please come visit.
Thank you. Oh, that's right. Yeah, yes, we started our Swahili
lesson.
I'll
make sure there's power when you come.
No, that's okay. I appreciate that. I'll just bring my solar charger. And that is it for our very first episode of the year. We will link to all of our social media handles in the show notes, as well as all of the resources we mentioned earlier. And next week, we'll be back with a guide to cruising in 2024 with our resident cruise expert, Fran Golden. So be sure to return for that. Ready for more unpacking? Visit afar.com and be sure to follow us on Instagram and X. We are at Afar Media. If you enjoyed today's exploration, I hope you'll come back for more great stories. Subscribing always makes that easy. And be sure to rate and review the show on your favorite podcast platforms. It helps other travelers find it. And if you ever want to ask a question or suggest a topic for coverage, you can reach out to us at afar.com/feedback or email us at unpacked@afar.com. This has been Unpacked, a production of Afar Media. The podcast is produced by Aislinn Green and Nikki Galteland. Music composition by Chris Collin. And remember, the world is complicated. We're here to help you unpack it. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Unpacked.
Hi. It's so great to be here.
Hi. Oh, us. Yeah, thank you. I thought you were talking to the listeners.
Should we try it again?
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay.
Probably, like, that paralyzed. Was awesome. Yeah.